Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, we welcome back Joey Redman to the show. Joey, how are you? And glad to have you here.
I'm great. I was trying to figure out earlier if I'm your most frequent Travel Stories guest and whether it's true or not. I'm just going to say it is, and I'm honored to be your most frequent Travel Stories guest.
I mean, this is your third episode on Travel Stories, and we are still in the double digits.
Yeah, so we'll just give me the title regardless.
You have the title. You have the title, sir. So there's a place that I think is probably one of the most popularly talked about destinations in the Caribbean, in the 3-hour flight from most places in the East Coast. And I think you go there at least annually, right?
Yeah, we've been to the Bahamas now, I think 3 times as a family in the last 3 years. And I've gone an additional time with some grown-up friends for a bachelor party.
And have you gone to Bahamar every time?
Yes, it's been Bahamar every time.
So Bahamar often gets really touted as one of those properties that's just so amazing. There's a lot of people that are huge, huge fans. We've got many in the community that have been there multiple times. What is it that makes Bahamar that destination for so many people? Is it just the closeness to the East Coast? Or is there something that makes Bahamar just that special?
Yeah, I think the Bahamas is a very accessible place for a large part of the country. I think if you look on Google Flights, the amount of direct flight options you've got, I think it connects a lot of cities really well, which I think when you get into the Caribbean, that becomes a problem real quick. For us in Dallas, once you eliminate those few AA direct flights that we have to Grand Cayman, Bahamas, Bermuda, we have like a weekly Aruba flight. You know, once you start wanting to get into the Virgin Islands, Antigua and all that, you're starting to deal with, you know, layovers in Miami. Basically, it's turning up what should be a 3-hour flight into a 6, 7, 8 hour with a layover flight, which for me kind of takes a lot of the fun away of it. From DFW, we've got 2 daily flights to Nassau. There's 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon. They're both pretty much direct turns. So that's pretty nice. For us, it's less than a 3-hour flight. Focusing on some of the positives, I mean, the Nassau Airport is absolutely nothing to write home about, unfortunately. You will not find any priority pass lounges or flagship first lounges there by any stretch of the imagination. But you do pre-clearance in the Bahamas. So you go through, they have TSA pre-check. You go through TSA pre-check, and then you can go through Global Entry. Which, to be honest, is one of the things I really like, being able to come back home as a domestic flight from the Caribbean, especially DFW. I don't want to get too in the weeds, but once you go through DFW customs, it's kind of a mess to get back to your car since the train is airside. And so it's kind of a pain. You end up having to take like a terminal bus to get to your car.
That's interesting. I never knew that about DFW. I mean, I suppose I never would, because why would I be going to a parking garage? But that's an interesting challenge that I don't think I've ever really thought about, because they probably, what, only have the customs in Terminal D, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you actually get, you're forced out of the airport from leaving. So basically, like normally, like I can describe to you what we do. Most of the time what happens is we actually like parking at Terminal D in general. Terminal E is kind of our backup. And so we'll park there regardless of who we're flying or where we're flying. And then let's say if we land back at A, usually what happens is I'll take my daughter, we'll land, we split up, my wife will go pick up luggage, me and my daughter get on the air train, get to where our car is, circle back and pick her up. But I imagine that airport was amazing pre-9/11, but in this post-security era, it is a little bit of a hassle to make things happen over there.
I mean, I guess you either have good landside connectivity or good airside connectivity. Very few airports have both, right? So, you know, obviously, you know, DFW, you can get between A and D using the train. And if you're in JFK, you've got this train, but it's on the landside. So, you know, if you want to get between terminals, you're obviously doing it only landside. You can't really get between Terminal A to JFK and Terminal whatever 1 without going outside and leaving security, right?
And you get that same problem at Newark. I'd imagine that you might have the reverse of that in Miami, but I can't think of the last time I've left Miami. If I understand you correctly, the crux of the argument for you is the connectivity to the Bahamas makes it the destination that a lot of people want to go to.
And it's a massive resort, right? It's huge, right? It's like three, is it three hotels? It's a Hyatt. It's a, is it an SLH? Is it a SLS?
SLS.
And a Rosewood? Those are the three?
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the negatives before we get started.
Okay.
Generally, I don't really like large properties. I mean, that's one of the reasons I really don't like all these big properties in Dubai, which I know we've talked about. Like, nothing says luxurious to me about having 1,800 rooms, right, in a property. Now, Grand Hyatt is just over 2,000. I think it's 2,012 rooms. And I'm not sure what the size of Rosewood. Rosewood's pretty small because the rooms are humongous. And then SLS at least contributes another 500 rooms. Let's just call it a 3,000 room property. So it is that. So if you're looking for an intimate, luxurious weekend trip, I think it's probably the worst place you could pick. I will say, for it being that many rooms, when we were there just 2 weeks ago, it was at 95 to 98% occupancy, they told me. And it doesn't really feel overcrowded. Like, you're not really inconvenienced. I think the longest wait we ever waited for anything was maybe less than 10 minutes for the breakfast buffet. So there's definitely a lot of people around, but you've also got to consider they've got over 20 restaurants. There's 9 pools plus a 15-acre water park. Like, people get spread out pretty well. So it is like a mega resort. I almost think you need to reframe it and look at it as like a mini Vegas resort that's kind of all in one. Like, for someone that's never been, you know, picture like a MGM Grand on the beach with a water park.
It's a good way to think about it. That sounds about right, but I guess definitely not a boutique experience or one where you're not going to get kind of hopefully name recognized service or anything like that, I would imagine.
Correct. I think one of the downsides that I can see from a lot of these miles and points people as well, before we get into the things I really like about the property, is you can't just kind of go willy-nilly, I would say. Like, if you guys were like, man, I really like to listen to this podcast, I'm going to go this weekend, I think you'd really set yourself up for failure. One of the biggest things that I've run into is you need to probably be booking restaurants at least 30 to 60 days out to get into these better restaurants.
It's like Disney.
So like, a little bit. Now, if you don't book that far out, you can probably scrape together a few things. We booked our stuff at about 35 days out this year for spring break. Now, mind you, that was 95, 98% occupancy. And there was 2 restaurants we wanted to go to that there was just no time slots. We also were a table of 6.
Wow. Which restaurants? Which venues were those?
One is the new Rosewood restaurant that we still haven't been to, called, it's like FI'LIA. But I think that's the newest restaurant on the premises. So I think that was one of the issues. And then the Chinese restaurant, Shuang Ba, there was just no availability all week, which we've been there before. It's relatively decent.
This is mostly for dinner, right? Do you have problems with lunch venues as well, or was it just mostly the dinner reservations that were?
No, that's just dinner reservations. Lunch options, there's food trucks at the beach. There's several pretty decent restaurants. Like, there's a Nunami Burger at the water park you can do. There's a Sugar Factory, which isn't my favorite, but that's also at the water park. There's a couple food trucks in the water park as well. And then you've got like a few quicker bite things. There's a Pizza Lab, which I like, that is actually in the Grand Hyatt side of the hotel. Honestly, like, if you can just get, you can also really, if you want to be on a budget, let's just say the breakfast buffet doesn't close till noon every day. So if you're not someone who needs to wake up and eat breakfast, you could theoretically start your day and swing into the breakfast buffet at 11, try and power through till dinner if you just want to skip a meal completely as well.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a really great point, and one of the criticisms that I've heard of Bahamar, and not just from a single data point, I've heard from many folks that the restaurants are very expensive there. Would you agree with that assessment? Or I don't know a good kind of comparison. I don't think I would say that I've heard that they are Maldives prices, but it definitely sounds like they're far more costly than what you'd expect at a normal Caribbean or Bahamian resort. Maybe Bahamian is a wrong example because there's just not a whole lot of other Bahamian resorts unless you go to like Grand Bahama Island or something like that.
I mean, it's certainly not cheap. I'm not the biggest like budget thrifty traveler out there, so I might not be like the best barometer. My issue that I run into is when you're being charged an exorbitant amount of money for food that is not good. And I don't really find that the case here. I've never tried the room service, but I've heard from several people and read in the Facebook groups and stuff that it's awful. So don't do that. But like outside of that, like nothing is bad. I mean, you're not getting out of dinner for less than $100, I think, probably anywhere. But you are also on an island. You're at a mega resort. But you've got two restaurants that are like led by a very familiar name at Food Network. You've got Itsuya, which most people in LA and New York would be familiar with, is a sushi restaurant. I think the options are decent. If I compare it to like going to Atlantis, which I've been to, I think the prices are comparable to Atlantis, but the food is actually good, where I would say Atlantis is below par for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you do hear some horror stories about the eateries that are available at Atlantis as well. So at least it sounds like at least if you're spending the money at Bahamar, you're buying some quality. And I do like the point about, you know, basically doing a brunch as a globalist or whatever at the Hyatt and enjoying that. And then I can tell you my favorite is having some French fries by the pool. That's always my go-to. So usually that would probably carry me through dinner pretty easily.
You and my daughter right there have the same diet for lunch.
Hey, there's a lot to be said about the filling nature of potatoes in almost any form. The other thing, and I don't want to hammer it home, obviously the reason that the restaurants are in such high demand is because, at least it sounds like, they're very much quality. And I think that's awesome. I think one of the first times that I've had that experience of having to get any sort of reservations was going to that Hyatt Regency Grand Reserve in Puerto Rico. Normally, maybe it's just the way I travel, but unless there's like a particular restaurant in a city that I'm going to that has been, you know, on my list for quite some time, I don't even think about reservations for restaurants. I just assume that I can arrive and I'll find food. Maybe it's me not being a foodie or what, but I feel like that would immediately set me up for failure if I wasn't doing the research to see that I needed to be 35, 40, 60 days out scheduling and getting reservations for my meals. So I could totally see that criticism right there. And I'm really curious how that's a sustainable thing, because I have to believe that I'm not the only one that doesn't think about restaurants 2 months out.
Yeah. Listen, I don't disagree with you. I don't know if they can really build more restaurants. You could always find somewhere to eat. It's just a matter of the better the restaurant. I think the more planning needs to go into it. I've also gotten lucky and we've swapped stuff week of where people have dropped their reservations. Most of the restaurants are, you put a credit card deposit. I want to say it's $50 or $100 a person for like no show, but you've got until the day of, yeah, you've got until noon day of to cancel for free.
So they're really serious about these reservations.
Yes. Well, I mean, given, like you said, the situation where 30 days out, they have no space. They're obviously, it is like service space that could be maximized, right?
So they make a little bit punitive because people are booking so far out that they want to really make sure that people are booking it and being thoughtful about it, and then realize that you might be able to swoop in day of or a couple of days before. But that to me sounds more risky than trying to finish a trip with close-in or word space.
Right. I mean, the nice thing is, like I said, you get till the grace period, I think, for every restaurant is noon day of. So, I mean, that's a pretty generous grace period. And then the other side of it, too, that I was just thinking of that I lost my train of thought. But, oh, they'll do a follow-up day before. So even if you book something and forgot and you don't want to go, you'll either get emails or phone calls from every restaurant day before, you know, text to confirm or cancel. So it's not like they're really trying to gotcha. I think they can just fill that space. Before we leave on food, I'll give a couple tips. I think my personal favorite restaurant is Marcus at Bahamar.
Marcus Samuelson, or who is it?
Yes, it is Marcus Samuelson. He actually has two restaurants on the property. So he has, it's like a fish and chop house. The best cornbread I've probably ever had is really good. There's a really good fried chicken. Oysters and some things have been great. And that property is actually all the way out on the water by the bay. So if you can do like a sunset seating, anything of that nature, I really recommend it. They have a ton of outdoor space there as well. Now, if you pull a Trevor and you show up and you have no reservations and nothing to do, they actually have an upstairs of that restaurant that is essentially like a bar, and it is a limited menu, but it's like first come, first serve. So like, you know, in a pinch, or if you have a night you forgot something, I've gone up there before and just had some drinks. Now, you can't get the full menu, like you can't get a steak up there or whatever, but you can get most of the appetizers and like some of the more popular dishes at the restaurant they'll deliver up there. It has a really nice bar. Same thing. You're like right on the water.
That sounds like a nice sort of backup plan, kind of option there.
Mm-hmm. And then Rosewood. I mean, I don't know how many of the listeners here have stayed at a Rosewood or familiar with Rosewood, but Rosewood is really well known for food and dining. That's like something they're kind of built on. If you're not on a budget, or you want to have, you know, let your hair down a little bit, they have a great French restaurant called Café Belloud, which I've done twice.
So this is Daniel Belloud?
Yes. It's not cheap. Definitely not, you know, budget friendly in any way, but it's really fantastic. They have their own opera singer. If you happen to have a birthday, you get your own serenation by an opera singer. It's pretty fantastic. They also have this new restaurant called Costa, which is like, it's like hipster-fied Mexican food. It's like a little weird. It's kind of all switched up and different. But I went for the first time this past trip. I liked it. They're just kind of mixing Mexican food or like Mexican-style food in different spices, or like taking non-Mexican food and spicing it Mexican. It's pretty well done. It's a really pretty layout. It's in these little islands. You sit in these like islands above the water, and the whole water is full of like koi fish and stuff. And they gave our kids fish food to feed the koi fish. So, yeah, it was a big hit with the kids there, I would say.
That sounds cool. Any other restaurants you want to highlight before we move on to other aspects of Bahamar's as the resort?
Shuang Ba is pretty good, which is their Chinese restaurant. That, for some reason, is really hard to get into every time. We've only been there, I think, once in the four times I've been there successfully with a reservation.
Is that one of the only like kind of like family style? Is that why? Because like, are most of the other restaurants, you know, one person, one entree, and Asian food obviously lends itself a little bit more to the family style sharing?
Maybe. I mean, Katsuya kind of is like that as well, the sushi restaurant. I'm not sure. It is a smaller restaurant, I would say.
Oh, okay. Maybe just table count
that
then.
That might be the issue. Yeah. Marcus's other restaurant is called Street Bird on the Beach, which is it's like a fried chicken shack on the beach. That's another great spot for a cheaper lunch. And then I'll even give my opinion on breakfast for a minute. I'm not a huge breakfast buffet guy. I'd really love like a fixed menu, real breakfast. I will say, as far as buffets go, it's a great breakfast option. All kids under 5 are free, which is nice. If you're globalist, doesn't really matter to you either way. It's $50 a head otherwise if you're over 5. They'll waive it for 2 adults, 2 kids. They have a really bad small Asian section, but they actually have a really good Mexican section. They have some really good Caribbean foods. They have Johnny Cakes. They'll have a huge pile of fresh fruit. They have a whole popsicle bar with like a employee that'll hand you like, I'd say there's probably like 40 different popsicle flavors. It's like a huge popsicle bar.
I'm excited already.
They've got a nice little juice bar in the back right corner. There's like meat carving station that usually has great like Italian sausages. They actually have the better bacon hidden back there as well. So go ask them for the bacon. But it's a pretty diverse buffet. We usually stay five nights. So, I mean, I don't really get sick of it. I'm not like overjoyed to go see it, but it's a good option.
Well, it's high praise if you go there for five meals in 5 days and you're not like, you know, kill me now. It'd have to be pretty decent, I'm sure, for you to still feel like at least you're not, you know, you're not wanting to go. You know, you may not be in love with it, but you're at the fifth day five. But it sounds like it's not preventing you from coming and having a meal.
Not only that, but after four or five visits, you know, if you're continuing to go back, that's clearly got to be at least a diverse enough buffet to keep you interested.
I'm excited about the bacon, you know, having just come from the Middle East. So, you know.
Oh, yes. I remember that. I know that feeling well.
Veal bacon and beef bacon and, you know, chicken sausage only gets you so far.
And you only spent a few days there. I spent like, I think it was like 8 or 10 days in Malaysia. And my gosh, when I got to Bangkok, I could not eat enough bacon.
Well, you mentioned about globalists. Do you have any other thoughts about the kind of the globalist experience? I will say, you know, one of the downsides, I guess, is at one point there was, I guess, a lounge, right? And they got rid of it?
Yeah. So the lounge looks like it's pretty gone full time, but that's also what's given you breakfast in the restaurant.
Ah, good point.
Yeah. I never went to the hotel pre-COVID, so I can't really give an opinion. One nice thing I will say as a globalist is you will get a alcohol voucher for one per adult per night. So we usually get 10 alcohol vouchers for alcoholic drinks. If you're not a huge drinker or if you don't feel the need to drink right when you're at a meal, I mean, that's a pretty big savings across that trip if you utilize that. I mean, I think even on the low side of value, you're probably looking at $150, $200 in free alcohol. You know, if you're able to maximize those coupons. And for someone like UTK, I'm sure they'd happily sub you a free Diet Coke.
I think I would have to go and buy some Diet Cokes and help give my voucher to somebody who would make better maximize use out of it, I guess.
Here, and I was about to say, with the price of Diet Coke nowadays, I mean, it's probably not that horrible of a value.
I suppose. Needless to say, or you know what Diet Coke costs in the Bahamas, not probably even worse.
Yeah. So I guess, TK, you're asking the taxi to stop at a supermarket on your way to get your Diet Coke so you can...
I guess so. get some 2-liter bottles for the week.
Any other globalist-specific benefits, Joey?
I will say I've been upgraded on 3 of my 4 stays. Not a massive upgrade, but I've been moved to the West Tower, which I think at one point was supposed to be like a residence tower, but I don't think it really panned out, so they've kind of converted it. Now, if you're going to go during spring break, Labor Day, 4th of July, it seems like nowadays the popularity of that hotel, you're pretty much at capacity. So you're going to pretty much be getting the room that you booked. The West Tower has less rooms. It's a little less crowded on that side. Downside is the West Tower doesn't have bathtubs. The East Tower, which is the standard rooms, do. If you get a fountain view side, your room is bigger, but the beach side, the oceanside rooms obviously have views of the ocean, but those are usually about 70, 80 square feet smaller, it seems. It's one of those properties where, like, I stayed in the base room. I've stayed in one of the suites with a full laundry and kitchen, and it's like, it didn't really make that much of a difference to me what I did. I didn't really spend more time in the room one way or the other.
You weren't cooking dinner every night?
I did not cook any dinner. I've never stayed in the standard suite, I don't think, which is the Grand Suite King that you can upgrade to. But I've heard it's not a great suite, and it's only 700 square feet looking at it on the site. So, like, I don't know if I would use a suite voucher there. If you get the opportunity, the premium suite is what I have stayed in, which is the Grand Executive Suite. That kind of has a full bedroom, plus the kitchen, plus there's a closet with a full laundry, which, you know, if you're there for more than 5 or 6 days, that might be nice. And those are over 1,000 square feet. So I think there is some pretty good value to be had there. And those are also at the top floors of the West Tower, which is nice. And while we're talking about that, I'll give a really good tip for our readers. You're going to get dropped off at the front of the hotel, and you'll see a check-in desk right on the right, which is like where they funnel everyone. What, you know, everyone's going to naturally go that way. If you walk into the doors on the left, you go about 500 feet down the hall, like just like walk in the left door and turn left. There's actually a secondary check-in desk for the West Tower. Now, they can check you in anywhere. It doesn't matter. Now, there is not a globalist line at that check-in desk, but generally I've never been over there with more than two or three people in line when there could be 40, 50 people right at the main, you know, entrance line. Not the best tip, but you know, if you are showing up in a busier time, I think I've spent 15 minutes, the longest checking in there. So it's not like a Vegas Friday night or anything.
Yeah. But that sounds like a little bit more exclusive, an option, just going to the West Tower, right?
It does. And I totally anecdotal, but I get the impression that those are kind of the better trained front desk agents as well.
Love
they
it.
Get to hide. So the senior staff are like, oh, I'm going to go on the West Tower where I can hide from the customers.
So Joey, I realized that we're going to make this next bit perishable, but just remind us, is it 29,000 points a night for a standard room at the Hyatt Bahama?
Yes, which is crazy because I think when we started going, it was a category 5. So I think this is the first year it hasn't gone up since the first year we went.
I was surprised not to see it on the list this year, but you know, especially given that it's just perennially very popular. But you were going to say cash prices?
Yeah, the cash prices just keep going up and up and up. And to be honest, I've never run the numbers where once you start including tax and resort fee, where you're not getting almost 2 cents a point. So like, it's hard to make a good argument that it's not great value. I mean, I'm not a big cost per point person because I pretty much just use points no matter what the value at this point, because I just have enough points and not enough cash. You know, don't we all have that problem? But it was $800 pre-tax and resort fee for when we went on spring break, which I think once you start throwing taxes on it, it's about $1,100 a night for 29,000 points. So it's like, how can you be upset at a redemption like that?
Yep. I think the Bahamians are pretty bad with their lodging taxes and other taxes and fees that they leverage on the stays. So I think that was my experience looking at in the past, because I think I've at least one time stayed in the Bahamas. Not actually, it's funny. I think I'm trying to think what was in the place of Bahamar prior to its construction. I'm wondering if it was potentially a Sheraton or something where I may have stayed years and years ago. Is that considered Cable Beach?
That is at the very end of Cable Beach, as far as I know, pretty much.
Yeah. So, but anyway, yeah, I remember thinking, you know, the same thing back in the day when I was looking at you know, points versus cash, you know, that the taxes alone would probably force your hand and make points almost always the better choice.
Yeah. I've seen them offer some, like, stay 3 nights, get a 4th free. And if you start getting into some of that math when they're running those promos, you might be okay. Or if you don't like crowds and you're considering going during hurricane season, like hurricane season doesn't frighten you or bother you that much, I think at that point you probably would find some scenarios where you could make cash.
Just some deals. Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of risk there in a, you know, a September, let's say, or a, I'd imagine September, October, maybe late August probably as well for that early part of the hurricane season. So I think we've talked about the accommodations. We've talked about the food. Do you want to jump to the water park and beach, or do you want to talk about casino next?
Let's go water park and beach. I think that's kind of a better highlight of the property than the casino, I would say, at least for me. So Baja Bay is the name of the water park, and it's 4 acres right on the beachfront, and it's a lot of fun. If you're a person that likes water parks or likes water activities, I think you could easily fill 2, 3, 4 days there. I mentioned we went on a bachelor party once, and I thought we were going to have to throw in a bunch of excursions and things, but I mean, we kind of had a good time just drinking beer, riding some of these water park rides, hanging out. The Lazy River is really fun. And they actually even do have a gambling pavilion inside the water park. So, you know, if you get the itch to play craps or blackjack, you can just step into the gambling pavilion in the water park without having to walk the probably, I don't know, 3/4 of a mile back to the hotel casino.
There's waterside craps?
Okay. I think
I'm trying to think how that even works. What happens when the dice go into the pool?
Well, it's It's in like a building inside. It's like an open air building inside.
Okay. So they're just like dudes in swimsuits that are gambling.
Yeah.
So you don't have the floating table or, you know, it wouldn't be a floating table, but you can't do the swim up craps, in other words.
Yeah, that would be kind of fun, but probably pretty gross, I guess. Which
probably
I don't
gross.
Remember how large. Yeah. I don't remember how large I said that it is, but it's 15 acres. I think I said something smaller than that, but it's a 15 acre water park. I would say it's right up there with most water parks I went to as a kid in America or anywhere. It has two of those Flow Rider systems for anyone familiar with those. Those little like wave simulators. It has a really, really tall free fall slide, which is kind of frightening. It has like a huge wave pool that no one is ever in, which I do kind of like. Because, you know, sometimes you see wave pools where like people are like falling on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Why is nobody in there? Is it just because the beach is right there, you know, in front of it? Or what's the reason for it being so lightly attended?
To be honest, the water park is never really that crowded. Like, you never feel cramped, disgusted. It's very well spaced out. It is only available to resort guests. And I know just recently they've started selling it to some of the cruise ships as part of a package, which I've noticed people have different color bands, so you'll see them in there. But I've been told that it's so cost excessive to buy a day pass that it keeps the crowd pretty small compared to Atlantis.
Now, is there an additional fee to go into the water park, or is that included if you are staying at one of those three hotels?
It is resort guests only, and or some of the cruise ships now are selling packages. So there is no other way to get into the water park as far as I understand.
I may be wrong in this, but as I understood, Atlantis, I think even if you were staying at one of those properties, you still had to pay to get into the water park. Is the water park at Bahamar included as part of the room rate or the resort fee?
Correct. Yeah, as long as you have a working key card, you get free access to Baja Bay. You've got some restaurants inside the water park. You've got, I think if you especially have kids in the maybe say 2 to 7 and 8 range, I think you could camp out there all day. My daughter and her friend spent 8 hours a day there for 5 days and didn't have a single problem with that whatsoever. Now, if you do get tired of the water park or the water park is not your scene, there's a SLS pool, which most of the time has like DJs and very like hip, young, cool things going on. You'll probably get the smell of a little funky cigarette going on over there if that's kind of your scene. And then Baja Mar themselves has 5 pools. The pool that I've really only spent time at, there's an adults only pool. The pool that I've generally spent the most time at is there's one all the way by the beach, which has some platforms you can jump off into some deep water, maybe say 6 feet and 10 feet. And then that pool also has like a cave that you can swim into. And that actually has a huge glass wall with their sanctuary. So you can look at all the nurse sharks, turtles, stingrays while you're in the water, which is kind of fun.
You know, I went ahead and looked up what Royal Caribbean charges for the Baja Bay Water Park. $186.99 per adult and $86.99 per child. So yeah, it's pretty high, pretty high. I can see why it hasn't been overrun with cruise passengers.
Yeah. I mean, do you go to Disney World or do you go to the Bahamar Water Park? And I know Disney is
it might be worth that money if it's not going to be crowded and you're not going to be on top of each other, that maybe that's a way to do it.
Yeah. No, that's true.
I would make the argument that if my daughter, given her own free will, would probably take Baja Bay over Disney 10 out of 10.
I love that. That's awesome.
Interesting.
Any comments on the beach?
The beach is not bad. We haven't spent a lot of time there, but they've got like a little like sports rental section. I think you can do kayaks. You can do, they put these big, I don't know what you call them, like floating lily pads kind of out in the water, not too far, that are like anchored into the ground that you can swim out to. The water's really clear. We usually aren't going during the summer, so the water is a bit on the colder side. I would say like the ocean water, not like completely uncomfortable, but probably in the mid 70s, 70, maybe in the high 60s. I will say at Baja Bay, to go back, they, according to my dive watch, at least the water temp was about 90 degrees in all the water there. So they do a pretty good job of keeping that pretty comfortable.
Cool. So shifting gears, you mentioned there was a casino. I don't know and maybe you do, is that casino associated with any of the major brands, or is that just kind of a one-off type casino?
I have their players card. It is not tied into anyone. I forget who even runs it. It's kind of a weird system. And it's a casino. If you're post dinner and you want to have some fun, it's there. But I mean, you're talking $15 table minimum craps, most of the blackjacks, $25.
Does it seem like the casino is a destination piece? For example, does it look like people are going to Bahamar because the casino is there, or is the casino there being there more of a, just like you said, you're after dinner, kids are going to sleep, and you want to play some blackjack or craps?
My opinion would be the second one, but I also would back that up by they're closing a large part of the casino to build a jazz bar. So that tells me
if they're doing that great.
if they're taking away square footage, then it's probably not generating enough revenue for them, it sounds like.
Generally, you're not going to see anyone at the casino during the day, is what I found. You'll have a couple people there during the day, but the second dinner is over, like sun's down, people have eaten dinner, it gets pretty full, I will say. And they have a little jazz bar in the lobby now that also will be very, very full most nights, like on a Friday, Saturday night. So I think the casino is kind of something that happens out of convenience. And while we're talking about the weirdness of the loyalty program, I will say one thing you're going to be very upset about at Bahamar that actually I haven't heard any other Miles and Points people really talk about on a podcast is almost all of your spend at this place will be ineligible to earn Hyatt points.
Wow.
Oh, geez.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Any idea why?
Mostly because most of the restaurants are either, like, Baja Bay is technically run by SLS. So, like, any money you spend at the water park is considered, like, third party, right? You know, it shows up on your bill. You can bill to the room, but they don't look at it as, like,
Hyatt charges.
Hyatt. Yeah. And then a lot of the pool stuff, a lot of the food trucks end up being, like, Rosewood properties or SLS. So you're definitely going to have a hard time racking. You know, you're probably going to walk out of there with, let's say, $1,000 in spent for 3-4 nights, right? And then you're gonna have like $120 eligible for 6x or whatever.
Oh man, that stings a little bit, especially when you consider some of the costs that you're incurring for some of the food and everything. Obviously it's a little bit in the weeds, but there are some of us that don't spend a dollar unless we can earn, you know, a multiplier on it. Oh, come on. I didn't get that quote just perfect from Ryan Bingham, but I was trying to go for, you know, the up-to-date.
Oh, is that what that was
quote
from? Oh, okay.
No. In that scene, he says, I don't spend a dollar unless I'm earning points for it. And I wanted to include the multiplier because perhaps back when Up in the Air came out, I don't think multipliers were as big as they are now. I mean, the amount of different cards that offer all those different multipliers, if you're getting 1x, that's it just kind of hurts in some cases.
I think I need Trevor to answer a trivia question. I think I need to.
Oh no!
So what was the first city that hosted the Olympics that was not in North America or Europe? Big hint: it's in Australia.
I know what it is.
Oh, would it be Sydney? Or no Melbourne? Of course.
There we go.
Melbourne. Yes. I remember Olympic. I feel like I walked through Olympic Park there.
That's right. 1958 Olympics, Melbourne, Australia. Okay, everyone, you can take your drink back to our regular scheduled program.
We made it pretty far. Last episode, I think it was in the first minute and a half.
Well, you know, we got to keep people guessing when it's going to come, you know. Now, you know, can't always have it at the beginning, you know. They got to listen. They got to work for it.
Touche.
Well, it does sound like it's a great place. You hear some mixed things about Bahamar, but it does sound like the water park does sound very attractive. I mean, I think it sounds like they're doing all the right things as far as kind of spreading people out and making it an attractive experience. It sounds like kind of they're doing maybe things that are a little differently and possibly better than Atlantis, right? Where you hear a lot of negatives about, you know, the quality of the food. You know, they may have lots of restaurants, but, you know, they probably doesn't sound like they have quite the number of celebrity chef and kind of high kind of foodie kind of places. It sounds like they decided to make it this resort, which I think does add to the allure, at least for someone like me that definitely is interested in some of the fine dining options.
Yeah, listen, if your goal is to extract the most value on vacation and not spend money, it's probably not the first place that I would pick. But I look at it for us, it's an easy vacation. You fly in. After I make my reservations at the property, you don't really have to worry about going off property for anything. Your breakfast is taken care of. Between the animal activities, the free, you know, there's a mini golf course that we've done, which it is a little obscenely expensive for mini golf, but it is on property. There's a mini golf course. There's also a grown-up golf course built by, I don't know, I forget now at the moment, some famous golfer across the street, which is attached to Bahamar. And then, you know, you've got tennis courts, basketball courts. If you really want to go somewhere and not really leave, but also eat good food and have plenty to do, I just think it's a real easy pick, you know, for like a spring break or a really long weekend.
Would you equate another resort that would be a good kind of competitor, you know, maybe elsewhere? Like what in your mind would be another resort that you felt was kind of in the same league?
It's really hard to say. I really think Vegas is the best thing because it's targeting it's tough because if there was another place like Bahamar, I'd go there all the time. So, you know, if someone wants to drop in the comments or on the Milenomics Slack a good alternative, I'm all for it. But usually I find most resorts can only do one of those things really well. Like they can do the entertainment side, but not the food side, where they have good food, but it's like, you know, very adult focused then, and it has, you know, very lame pools and activities. But they definitely seem to be taking that Vegas model where it's like, we want to keep people on the property, keep people entertained, focus on food, having entertainment, you know, there's adult activities, there's kid activities.
And it's 3 hours away. I mean, it's a 3 hour flight effectively. That seems to be, to me, one of the biggest selling points is just the closeness that you've got for having everything all in one place.
Yeah. Cause what is it from you guys in DC? It's just under 3 hours for you too, right?
Yeah, I have to believe it's probably under 3 hours because it's about two and a quarter to Orlando.
To Florida, South Florida. And then it's not much further, I would imagine, to go to Bahamas from a flight time perspective.
And I'm pretty sure everybody has nonstops. That's the other thing. On the East Coast, everybody's got nonstops. I mean, I think JetBlue flies Mint down there, maybe. That right there seems
probably
nice
from the New York area, maybe not from
No, DC. Yeah, from JFK. They might fly it from JFK. Oh, I don't know. I know that they fly Mint from LAX to Nassau. Now, that doesn't make sense to me. Maybe that's a little bit of a tangent, but like, I don't know if I'm in the West Coast that I'm going to go to the effort of going all the way to the Bahamas. I feel like Hawaii is a lot closer.
It's different. I mean, you know, Cabo or, you know, Mazatlan or, you know, Puerto Vallarta. I mean, it's a different beach vibe and they have different kinds of resorts. I mean, you know, it's not the same.
No. I'm not saying it is the same. I just feel like you're going to fly, what, 6-7 hours to get to the Bahamas? Is it 6 hours?
Yeah. So there is no Mint service to New York.
Okay. I stand corrected. I knew Mint,
according to Google Flights.
I knew Mint was flying one route at least, but I guess that's just the LA route.
Maybe Puerto Rico or Barbados or something.
So they've got LA to Nassau's blocked out at 5 hours, 40 minutes. It's basically the same distance as Hawaii, which I think too kind of becomes problematic. I mean, I think Hawaii is pretty easy with a lot of great resorts, especially now that Bahamar is not as cheap. I mean, if you're talking 29,000 Hyatt points a night, I mean, you're opened up to a lot of alternatives in Hawaii. You can fly to Hawaii for a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
But I don't think they have any resorts with probably the same expansive kind of water park experience, it sounds like. I'm trying to think. Like maybe some of the Hilton properties or something that have something similar.
Hilton Waikoloa is big, but I don't think it's got a water park. You know, in the same definition as what you see in the Caribbean.
And yeah, I don't think so. Hawaiian Village and the food there is pretty poor, I will say.
Yeah, you got to get off property, like on property over that way. Yeah. I mean, you've got Roy's just up the street that I think is quite good. But I mean, that is still technically off property.
I think islands always have just a lot stacked against them for having good food. So the fact that they were able to curate kind of a food and beverage program with so many varied and different options, I think it's actually pretty impressive but you know, I guess it makes sense because, you know, I really do feel strongly that the marketing for Bahamar was so targeted at your kind of New York metro people. And I think if you're, you know, a well-to-do Manhattanite, you know, going down for a Bahamian vacation, you're going to have certain standards. their restaurant game, obviously, Manhattan, very high. And people are going to expect something at that level when they show up in the Bahamas. And if they don't get it, well, they're not coming back.
And you're only 60 miles off of Miami. You've got regular connectivity from so many different places in the U.S. You're getting that quality of food, probably. I mean, you might be paying air freight for it. But I mean, with the frequency of flights, you're probably getting some of that quality flown in on a daily basis.
Sounds like just stay away from the room service, apparently.
Well, Joey, really, thank you so much for coming back on. You, sir, now have to somehow retain this most frequent guest of the Travel Stories podcast.
He's a Travel Story Diamond Elite.
Oh, Diamond Elite.
But guess what? The membership here ends on April 1. So I'm sorry. The day after tomorrow, you're back to zero.
there you go. So Joey, just tell our listeners how they can find you.
You can find me at my name pretty much everywhere. JoeyReDmond on all socials. Feel free to ask me any questions about Bahamar or anything else. I probably don't know the answer to, but I'll make up something real good.
I can definitely vouch for Joey being able to, you know, BS as well as the best of us. So
absolutely. Yeah. He has talked his way on planes, even when we have tried to talk or demonstrate why they shouldn't let us on planes.
Yeah, fortunately, we have made it on flights that have closed before. And thank you, Joey.
And made it through security as the gate is coming down.
You guys are giving me the sweats just thinking about all this.
Got to plan that next trip, I swear.
Yes, yes.
Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you've enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.